This show will air December 26th. I'm going to be very busy that week helping clients and consultants with the end-of-the-year application crunch. And you will also be busy either with your own applications or with holiday and family events and parties. Now is an excellent time for an encore show. Consequently, I decided to replay my interview with UCLA Anderson Assistant Dean of MBA Admissions, Alex Lawrence. Dean Lawrence gave a lot of information about UCLA Anderson's outstanding MBA program, as well as insight into MBA admissions, both in general and specifically at Anderson. Tune in to learn both about UCLA Anderson and to hear what an MBA admissions director is looking for when he reviews an MBA application. We'll run that interview in just a second. Right now, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for listening week in and week out, or just whenever you find a show that you like. So again, thank you. I also want to wish you a wonderful holiday season, perhaps a few days late, and a happy, healthy, and prosperous new year, a new year filled with the realization of your educational and professional dreams, and of course, acceptances. Now, the interview with Dean Alex Lawrence. It gives me great pleasure to have, for the first time on Admissions Straight Talk, Alex Lawrence, Assistant Dean of MBA Admissions and Financial Aid at UCLA Anderson School of Management, which just happens to be where I earned my MBA. Alex is also a fellow Anderson alum who earned his MBA in 1999. Prior to that, he earned a bachelor's in electrical engineering and master's too, and after earning his MBA, he worked in management consulting for 4 years and then returned to UCLA Anderson as director of the Reardon program. In 2012, he became first the director and then later the assistant dean for MBA admissions. Alex, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Thank you, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Delighted to have you. I actually want to ask you how you go from a master's in electrical engineering to admissions, but let's get to that later. Let's do the more meaty stuff first. Can you give an overview of the Anderson full-time MBA program for those listeners who aren't that familiar with it, perhaps focusing on its more distinctive elements?
Sure. Well, it's a great program in a fantastic location, Los Angeles, that really offers so many different opportunities for our small student body. Our students look at opportunities from an industry standpoint in management consulting, finance, technology, real estate, entertainment, believe it or not.
Yeah, right.
And they're doing all that in a flexible curriculum during their two-year experience. The program offers, I think, one of the best career centers, the Parker Career Management Center. We can talk about that later.
Sure.
But as an alumnus and now working here at the school, I just see so many opportunities for those who do attend Anderson and graduate and become a part of the family later on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's, now that you've given us the overview, what's new or changing at Anderson at this point in time?
Well, I think seems to be consistent over the last few years at some other schools, most recently, I think, at Kellogg. We're building a new building.
Oh, really? Because the current building is fairly new.
Yes, exactly. We get, I don't know how many visitors coming into, especially our office today, probably 50, 70, who remark at how beautiful the UCLA campus is.
Gorgeous.
And it is. But we expect that the Marian Anderson Hall will be available in 26 months. We're actually doing a groundbreaking later this month in July.
Wow.
So that's one thing. You know, everybody likes, I think, a shiny new building. I think it's going to be fantastic and just building on what we already have here at the school. We have a leadership development program for our students that we launched this past year, and we'll continue to build on that, just providing more leadership development for not only our first years and second year students inside and outside the classroom. We launched a social innovation specialization this past year that, again, you know, we're going to continue to build on it, lessons learned from the previous year. And I think another big change is that we changed the start of the school year for the first year or incoming students. In the past, students would arrive on campus in September, but last year, for the first time, we brought in students at the first week of August. And the feedback from the class of 2018, is that they really appreciated the opportunity to come in, earlier than what previous students may have who did experience, in the sense of trying to balance just so much between the classroom environment, career recruiting, getting used to a new environment, being able to take, say, a couple of courses, the core courses, as opposed to four. They just can't imagine how one would have done all that. Of course, you and I did that years ago.
Is Anderson still on the quarter system?
We're still on the quarter system. It's actually, we're taking advantage of the summer schedule that is housed under the UCLA academic system. But it's just a matter now that our students start first week of August, and they're ending under the same time frame of in the spring.
So if you're on the quarter system and the quarter starts, or used to start at least typically the end of September, does that mean they have like a pre-session before classes actually start, or are you lengthening the quarters?
They're having a pre-session. So they're taking a couple of courses that they would have normally taken in the fall, in addition to a student orientation. So like I mentioned before, in the old days, they would be balancing, especially coming in the fall quarter, after a student orientation, they're taking four classes. They're also kind of going through the career recruiting. A lot of different organizations are doing business sort of information sessions or company information sessions. But now that's spread out across an extra month and a half. So by the end of that short session, they come back into the traditional fall quarter, taking, we prescribe three courses, but then, like I mentioned before, it's sort of business as usual with company briefings. Then also the second year student population joins them, and it just makes the campus back to sort of like a full-on vibrant session.
And are the second years also starting in August? Is that what you're indicating now also, or are they
they're
starting later?
Yeah, they're starting like they typically have done with the fall quarter starting at the end of September.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the quarter system is pretty intense.
It is. For all three schools that I did attend in the past, I was always on the quarter system. So I never had that semester experience.
Yeah, I mean, I went to UCLA undergrad and grad, and for years after graduating, if I was feeling stressed or pressured or like I don't have enough time to do whatever I'm doing, at least 20, maybe more years after that, I would always dream about being in school and falling behind on the quarter system. That's how traumatized I was by the system. No, that's just, you know, how, and I would realize that that's, you know, what's, you know, I knew what was going on, but it was, again, years and years afterwards. But okay, so thank you very much. Anything else new before we move on?
No,
that's a lot.
That is a lot. I don't believe there is a typical day here at UCLA Anderson, but those are like some of the big ticket items.
And what is the nature of the leadership development program, the new leadership development program?
We really wanted to give students an opportunity. It is volunteer based, so it's not required of our students, but we wanted to give them a different opportunity, let's say, from a consistent style of coaching to allow our students to learn from some other peers as well as staff here at the school. So to give you an idea, I'm part of the coaching tree. Mm-hmm. And it really allows the students to sort of, I think, build a rapport with some of the senior leadership and talk about some or provide some observation on things that they think that they want to develop when they're working, say, with the leadership teams, their learning teams from an academic standpoint, or with their Anderson career teams, the ACT groups we have here at Anderson. They ask for advice on how they should approach some of the things they may have received from a report standpoint. They all take the Berkman assessment tool that I'm sure you're familiar with. So it's, again, just another opportunity for our students to get feedback from a different perspective other than, say, the Career Management Center or from an academic resource like a faculty person. I had four students who were, I like to say, under my coaching tree this past year, And, you know, it ranged from anywhere like, how can I position myself to be viewed as a thought leader in my classroom? Because some, you know, all of our students are really talented. They're coming in with skill sets that are pretty unique. And, you know, being in the classroom, there's not too many opportunities in every class to really showcase all of those talents. And then even when they get into their smaller learning teams, that may be an opportunity to, you know, share a little bit more in a smaller group setting. But the individuals that I worked with, we talked about some opportunities that may be coming up from a student organization standpoint, like becoming the president of the student government or leading a conference or putting together a new course. Who are the faculty to work with? So, you know, 2 years is not enough time to learn all of the sort of how the machine works here at Anderson, mm-hmm. but working with the coaches here at Anderson, they can give some guidance on how to approach some of those opportunities that the students are seeking.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, UCLA Anderson is very proud of its culture where students share success, think fearlessly, and drive change. Let's unwrap and examine for a second each of those core qualities. What does it mean to share success? What does it mean to think fearlessly? And what does it mean to drive change, which probably is the most obvious of them?
From the shared success standpoint, our idea is that when you collaborate to win, then that's when you're sharing success. I mentioned examples in areas earlier by, say, academically, we have our students participate in learning teams. So while it is still a competitive and demanding curriculum, it does require individual work. We really want our students to support each other in that environment as well, so that, again, no one is left behind. Professionally, I mentioned the ACT groups, the Anderson Career Team. Second-year students serve as coaches for first years in specific industry or career pursuits. So you'll have anywhere from 4 to 5 first-year students who may be focusing on a career management consulting, being counseled, mentored by a second-year student who's been there, who can talk about the timeline, milestones, their own experience from a summer internship standpoint. Alumni, I know that I've definitely been a recipient in many different ways of my peers nominating me for specific awards or being part of special advisory groups, and I've done the same for them. So I think we really believe we own that space of talking about sharing success. You know, talking about thinking fearlessly, I think other schools also put that out there too about how smart their students are, how creative they are. You know, we believe like our entire community, students, faculty, and alumni are fearless in thinking about opportunities and innovation, and experimenting and discovering how to disrupt industries. When you look at the accomplishments of our alumni, especially from those who have started their own companies or part of an organization and how they're looking at how to do business differently, Larry Fink, founder of BlackRock, Susan Wojcicki at YouTube, countless examples, and you know, definitely from a consumer standpoint, you can kind of see how they, along with others, are looking at how to do business differently, how the world is changing, and addressing those different challenges. You know, from the driving change standpoint, that really comes from the idea that, again, we're pragmatic and action oriented. We want to see our own impact and measure ourselves against the results. And again, I think some schools, again, could, there might be some overlap in that idea, but being a part of the community as a student alumnus and now part of the staff, I see how vibrant all of those qualities come out of our different community members and how they support each other. And being very accomplished in so many different ways from, say, when you and I were in school, but, you know, we're part of that alumni group, right, as well. And that's what, you know, when I can't tell you how many times just from my travels all over the world and seeing people eventually come on campus, they talk about who they spoke with or how they interacted with the faculty, the alumni, the students, and they just say, like, wow, there's something different about that UCLA Anderson experience. I definitely want to go check it out. And then when they do, I definitely am a recipient of all the emails that do come in talking about, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you or with person XYZ. And it really confirms my my idea that I want to apply to Anderson and be part of the community.
Right. Well, one of the things that I remember most distinctively from my time at Anderson was the collaborative spirit. That was, you know, and I at one point was on a panel, an alumni panel, I think it was 1996. So that was 20 years ago, and almost 20 years after I had graduated. And at the time, I was a senior alum, and there was a current student and a recent graduate, you know, like out maybe 1 or 2 years. And every single one of us, and I think it started with a student, spoke about the collaborative atmosphere at Anderson. That's deep wired, hardwired, I think, into the school's DNA. I'm not sure, I'm not saying it couldn't be destroyed or changed, but it's something that lasts that long is deep. So, and I'm that's not taking away from the driving change and thinking fearlessly. I noticed on the site that in terms of driving, thinking fearlessly also, there was the element of you're willing to take risks because you had the data to reduce some of the fear. That was also part of it, which I thought was a very pragmatic and realistic approach to both driving change and assuming risk or thinking fearlessly.
Yeah.
But, okay, now one of the things that Anderson has been known for since before I started at Anderson was a capstone project. In my day, it was called Field Study. I think it was still Field Study when you were there, wasn't it? Or
definitely.
Had already changed, right. It has by now morphed into applied management research, and more recently, Anderson added a business creation option. Can you describe both the more traditional field study and the business creation option, which is probably an example of Anderson's innovative and entrepreneurial spirit?
You're right on point. So, you know, Anderson, UCLA Anderson was the first school to create this type of opportunity for its students over 40 years ago. The, you know, from our perspective, the traditional one, the field study, but now the applied management research project. It's a 20-week project that our students participate in, where they partner with a client to solve a key strategic business challenge that the client has. Those clients could be a Fortune 500 firm, a nonprofit, a startup, and it's a fantastic opportunity in so many different ways. When I went through it, again, as you mentioned in my profile, I did management consulting post-Anderson. So having the opportunity to work with a client in that manner before actually entering the working world was a great opportunity to just give me a taste of what that experience could be like.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience is one where it's not just, say, just localized to Southern California. Our students work with clients across the U.S. There's international projects as well. Then there's the business creation option for those students who are more, say, entrepreneurial focused. It allows anywhere from 20 to 23 teams to participate. That number has grown each year. And out of that experience alone, which you might imagine, you know, again, obviously it's one where the student teams are focused on their own idea.
Mm-hmm.
They get exposure to faculty and the business community, angel investors, venture capital, to focus on how to build on those ideas.
It's an opportunity to launch a business while in business school, right?
Exactly. That's a, you know, that's the ultimate goal of
yeah.
all. You know, we definitely have a number of success stories. I'm sure you want to talk about that later. But,
I'd love to hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, just to kind of still stay high and then drill down it. Have it. You know, there's over the since the program started, over 50%. The BCO projects have launched. Looking at one in particular, that one of my favorites, Bow to the Sheikh. It was the idea came from an alumna, Kelsey Dory. She graduated in 2013. She's the CEO and founder of the group. It's the only designer bridesmaid rental site. And you know, if you talk to Kelsey, she said, "Hey, it was about time to disrupt this $120 billion wedding industry." She had experience before, like really working on the business plan while in school. She had worked in the retail industry, Bloomingdale's, Little Black Bag, BCBG, Mathavia. You know, at least that one I had to look up. I didn't actually know what that was. But, you know, even before business school, she worked at IBM as well. But she realized a problem and wanted to solve it. Like I said, she had experience working in the bridal and rental industries. She pitched her idea at Anderson at a venture competition. And she received funding on the spot just last year. I believe she received raised $5 million in funding as well.
Wow.
So, Series A funding. So, you know, that's just one of many. And, you know, I think, again, being in Southern California, being in California, that's one of those unique opportunities, given, like, the entrepreneurial spirit and opportunities in the area.
Had she come to UCLA with the intention of starting this business, the intention of starting any business, or did she get the idea while in B-School?
I believe she had the intention of, one, she wanted to do a career change for sure. And given experience, she was looking to, you know, be a part of something new or start her own. I can't take credit for recruiting her. You know, she graduated 20 and I wish I could, but I know I have plenty of other success stories over the last 5 years of classes.
Oh, sure.
That's like the beauty of the Anderson experience. Like, even if you just have that inkling of wanting to do something different, you get into this environment and you start, you know, pitching ideas around with your classmates, seeing different resources in front of the classroom, different people talk about whether when they were in school, this is what they were thinking, this is what they did, or just to give some other building blocks to think on. I'm sure she did build on some of those interactions, some of her, you know, own experiences to say, like, you know what, hey, I'm gonna take a leap here. I'm gonna, you know, embody the three pillars, and you know, think fearlessly, drive change, and you know, I'm sure she participated in the shared success to help her launch the business as well.
For sure. Okay, that is a cool example. Now, you mentioned initially in you know, when I was asking for the overview, that you know, Anderson's location is a major advantage of the school. How so? Obviously, it's in the heart of UCLA. It's in the heart of West Los Angeles. And the connections to Hollywood and the entertainment industry, I think, are the most obvious. But can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, definitely. So I think many times that's what people automatically think about, entertainment, right, media, Los Angeles, which are important, which we definitely have a community of students and alumni engage with. But when you look at our experiences when we were in school, I think it was pretty standard to just really say focus on your studies and then focus on, from a career standpoint, a summer internship, and then, of course, trying to go, whether it be entrepreneurial or something that's more corporate. Now, I've seen over the last 13 years that I've been here at Anderson how that student experience is so much more, it's richer and different. The students are taking advantage of the academic internship opportunity, so working in a smaller capacity at different organizations during the academic year. Perhaps, you know, they have an inkling of they want to have that experience of working at a startup. So they'll do a few hours a week, or from a career change standpoint, I don't know about you, but it was it was, I won't say rare, but there were only a handful of students who were doing academic internships from a career change standpoint. So, mm-hmm. you know, working at a hedge fund, you know, during the academic year, because, you know, you wanted to get into the financial services arena somehow, some way.
I think it was actually discouraged when I was in business school.
There you go. You know, so because probably they, you know, the administration wanted you to focus on your studies.
Exactly.
Or not to take away from the community. So, but now, like I said, over the, you know, given how the sort of the business world has changed, the environment overall, any opportunity to get more access to those experiences, those networks, those people, we highly encourage, and our students look for that. So, you know, not to just focus on the academic internship. When you look at the classroom environment, I think that was another big drawing point for me, and it's consistent today, about the different teaching styles. Yes, there are case study methodology available, but there's a number of practitioners, lecturers who come into the classroom as well. You know, just to say, focus on something like real estate, but the best professors, they bring in that experience and life lessons and people who are actually making a difference in not just California, but, you know, worldwide. And they talk about, and they ask for feedback from the students, like, okay, this is the type of opportunity I'm looking at, this type of property. What would you do with this? You know, and students are, in some cases, that's a homework assignment. I remember Professor Sussman and Professor Habibi, over the last 4 years that I can remember, they actually orchestrate a sort of like a site visit where they'll rent a bus and all the students will go out in a given day and tour all these different types of projects that are going on around LA County. So, you know, it's like a different. Yeah,
there's so much building.
Right. So much building. If you're in real estate, fantastic opportunity for sure. And so, again, just another example of a unique opportunity. The dean has her own class that is always overbooked. It's packed. I try to get in there and sit on a couple of classes because she opens up her Rolodex and she brings in some fantastic people to kind of from different industries. And they talk about from a leadership standpoint what it meant to say run a certain area, Procter & Gamble. Or I remember Peter Gruber, who co-teaches the course, like when the Golden State Warriors won the championship the night before, they had a class, and he said, hey, you know what, I'll be unavailable tomorrow because at tomorrow night's game, we're going to win the championship, and behold, it did. So those are some of those cool, unique opportunities where when you look at the makeup of the people sitting in the room, that may not be number one on their sort of interest, so to speak, from a career standpoint. But I've seen a lot of great connections come from the students getting a chance to interact from a networking standpoint with some of those speakers, those resources. I remember the chairman of Google being a speaker in the dean's class, and he asked how many people were going to be interning or starting Google full time, and probably 30% of the class did raise their hand. So it was, I'm sure, a cool way to kind of launch your career with Google from that standpoint, meeting the chairman at that time. So it's just, again, I don't know how many top MBA programs can provide that type of unique experience, so to speak, where you can have an academic internship, have these resources come on the campus, and for you to go out of the campus, because it shouldn't be one where you're just sitting in the classroom Monday through Friday or whatever the time frame is, and just confined to, say, a summer internship and a full-time opportunity. It's 2 years is not a lot of time to have.
No, it goes by so fast.
Goes by so fast, and you know, our viewpoint is that, you know, it's not necessarily a 2-year experience; it's a lifelong experience. So you can definitely expect from the UCLA Anderson MBA one that you're part of a family, a lifelong experience, and it's just like the 2 years is just an extension of what's to come.
It's great, great intro to it too. You mentioned the Parker Career Center, and it is very well respected, very well regarded. Now, recruiting has changed. There are more recruiters and more opportunities, but the hiring path is much more splintered and diverse than it was, let's say, when I'm sure when you were looking for a job, and certainly than when I was looking for a job after finishing my MBA. How is Anderson and the Parker Center in particular adapting to those changes?
Sure. So look at the services and programs that the Parker Management Center offers. It has been doing this now for a number of years under the leadership of Dean Regina Ragazzi. When I talked to a lot of the current students and recent alumni, they said, like, you know what, I couldn't take advantage of all of those resources, but it was nice to know that those were available. They do over 4,000 career advising sessions with our students. 100% of the students who are seeking an internship do receive one. How does that happen? It comes from, again, like these opportunities that they provide. Days on the job events that they go coast to coast for a whole week where there's no academic responsibility. Even my boss, Dean Weiler, he facilitates some of those sessions, like to New York, Wall Street, and, you know, the, say, the Pacific Northwest with companies like Amazon and Microsoft. You know, I think, and as I listen to how companies are evaluating talent using social media, online resources, you know, our career center is prepping students for video interviews for the day.
And sure.
It's already happened here where companies are asking, you know, we want to do a video interview with you. So they practice with them. You know, there's a lot of things that other schools do as well, you know, getting your resume ready or in the proper sort of format so that it is, has a lot more higher visibility. But our career management center, they're beginning those relationships even before students are coming on campus. You know, they're working with you before the August timeframe, soliciting information, making the students start thinking about, like, okay, you know, you may have wrote that you wanted to be in private equity, but what does that mean? Find out what type of firms interest you.
And are you prepared? And are you prepared for that? I mean, we have clients coming to us. Oh, I want to do private equity, or I want to do. Well, do you have any relevant experience?
Right. And do you know how many, say, opportunities are available? Say,
right.
Like the it's especially if some students are interested. Like, oh, I just only want to work in Los Angeles or on the West Coast to get quality, and then really to kind of say, okay, what's your plan B? You know, what if that doesn't come to fruition? Are you open to expanding sort of your set of opportunities? You know, I only highlighted probably a quarter of all the things that Parker Management Center does, but they have staff who are coming from industry, so people who have worked in management consulting, real estate, entertainment, financial services. So they can talk about what they have seen, what they advise, you know, that students do from, you know, again, from a counseling standpoint. They open up the Rolodex, so, you know, it goes deep within not just the UCLA Anderson network, but other networks as well, just because of their own personal contacts. So, you know, I think in today's market where, especially in the graduate business education, where there's just a large volume of very talented individuals, you can't necessarily not do everything, you know, even though that's hard to say. It's like just doing one or a couple things is not going to be enough because it's so competitive. And I think from the UCLA Anderson standpoint, especially its business partners, what I take comments from Dean Ragazzi is that a lot of them are saying, like, you know what, the Anderson students are just as competitive as other top business school students, but probably one of the most unique qualities is that they're real strong team players. We really like working with them. They go the extra mile, and those are, you know, a lot of qualities that we're not surprised at because that's our community.
Right, right. That's great. Thank you very much. Okay, let's turn to the application and admissions for just a second. UCLA Anderson accepted approximately one out of every four applicants last year that U.S. News had statistics for, which I think actually is the preceding year. How do you winnow it down from in terms of who gets invited to interview, who gets accepted?
Yeah, so one, very important thing is that we really want to bring in individuals, at least from an interview standpoint, who resonate with what we've been talking about earlier, our right. culture. We're looking for people who have that evidence of working in teams, being collaborative. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to splash that all over your resume, but we're looking for those elements of success, and that comes in a variety of ways, whether it's coming through the essays.
I don't think they have to splash it all over their resume, but they have to demonstrate it, I think, throughout their resume.
Exactly. Couldn't say it any better. So, and then, again, we have a very talented student group, and, our class profile is on our website. A lot of people ask me questions like, do I have to have a 700 GMAT? Do I have to have a 3.5 GPA? We admit people with scores lower than those, and we deny people with scores higher than that. For one thing, we want to make sure that the people, from an interviewing standpoint, they are competitive in all different facets. So, if individuals do get an interview, that is a good sign, because we're curious. We want to see how is the individual going to perform in our environment academically. How are they going to contribute to the community? It's a small student population. Each class is about 360 students. So we want students to roll up their sleeves, participate in student clubs, conferences, support each other academically and professionally as well. We're not looking for some of the lone wolf sort of profiles, because at the end of the day, a lot of the learning that some of the best learning are that students get are from each other. So, academically, standardized test score wise, you definitely have to have, you definitely have to be competitive in that sense. But I always tell people, you want to be in the range. You don't have to necessarily meet those numbers, but it's a holistic process overall.
Right, right. So, okay. I'm struck as you're talking, and of course, this was something that was really emphasized throughout the AGAC conference, not just at UCLA, but really with all the schools, was that the stats are kind of a check-the-box kind of thing, and cultural fit with the school's mission, its culture, that was far more important, really, in terms of really of turning an application into an acceptance. Is that fair comment?
Yeah, that's a fair statement, yes.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned to me just before we started, the recording, that UCLA is going to have a new question this year. By the time we actually post this recording, the new question will be public. But I don't know what it is. So can you tell me now, what is the question for this year? And then perhaps provide some suggestions for responding to it.
So we're actually going to have two essays.
All
and
right.
Not so much trying to make it more complicated, but in review of last year and previous, every year we're trying to give the applicant more of an opportunity to showcase and share why they want to be part of the UCLA Anderson community, give them as many opportunities as possible, including the essay. So essay one this year is describe your short-term and long-term career goals. How can the UCLA Anderson experience add value to your professional development? Now, I just lead off with that more career-focused one, because at the end, as I say, at the end of the day, our research and our data shows that one of the top two reasons that people attend business school is career-focused.
Of course.
So we wanted to see, again, how does the Anderson UCLA Anderson MBA experience fit into that, which dovetails into essay two and sort of what we've been talking about maybe over the last 2 or 3 minutes here about culture. Essay two is describe how you would contribute to the UCLA Anderson community. And the people who are the most successful, in my opinion, who receive the invitation to interview, receive ultimately, I guess, the golden prize of being admitted to the class at Anderson, they've done their due diligence. They really know who we are. You know, so when talking about tips on how to address the essays or put together a competitive application, one, we're a very open campus, so that allows visitors to attend a class, meet with professors, have lunch with a professor, do coffee chats with students, have a possible meeting with an admissions officer. We take our show on the road. I travel with the head of the Career Management Center, Dean Rigazzi, who I mentioned earlier, so that in many cases, especially from the Park Career Management standpoint, you're talking with the person who is in charge of the services and the opportunities and who has like a vision of what's available and what our school can provide. So it's not just me relaying that information from the career management standpoint, but for all the other resources that I mentioned earlier, especially alumni, the students and the faculty, that they're very strong representatives of the community as well. So once you start immersing yourself, hopefully on the campus experience or in some of the off-campus information sessions that do include alumni as well, you can start to see and hear from their own stories. One, what does it mean to be a partner of the Anderson community? How these individuals have benefited? Hopefully, maybe there's an example, a person who has a similar background or a similar interest that, from an applicant standpoint, that they are interested in. And then, really, at all of those information sessions, and even when you're on campus, we're going to tell you how to apply. Or how to put together a competitive application, but it really comes from interacting with as many touch points of the Anderson experience as possible. Now, we know not everybody can visit the UCLA Anderson campus, but when you look at our website, which has a tremendous amount of information, like I believe most schools do, you're going to see small video testimonials. You're going to see...
Also some excellent advice.
Yeah, and you see also, you know, yes, there are the FAQs, but we have a student ambassador group that you can contact, that you can start your own conversation and really find out why they chose Anderson, how to apply competitively, get some feedback, not so much on the application per se, but just some thoughts in terms of other opportunities that, you know, we can't necessarily cover all in, say, this podcast, but conferences that are going on the campus, speaker series, what the Career Management Center sort of outcomes and opportunities by looking at the employment report. So having those sort of people who are on the ground who are experiencing it, and probably another important point, who is at their own peer level, you know, their own sort of age demographics, who like, hey, I was in your shoes a year, two, 3 years ago, and this is how I approached it, from tackling the GRE or GMAT test-taking experience to collecting the letters of recommendation, all those type of things. So you can actually, you know, make it more real for yourself. Now, of course, if that person has to do all the hard work and put it together as an applicant, but it's great when you can start talking to people who've been there, done it, and then you can start visualize like, okay, I can see myself being on the campus as a member of the class of 2020 or beyond.
All right. Well, great. So any other changes to the application, any changes to the letters of recommendation or the interview or anything like that, or are you keeping those pretty steady for the upcoming cycle?
They're going to be steady for the cycle. However, with the letters of recommendation, from an industry standpoint, there's been more of a move toward, lack of a better term, a common letter of recommendation.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to, like, you know, throw some excitement out there in the industry or bad information, but we recognize how, you know, when applicants are approaching somebody to write their letter of rec, and that, you know, sometimes that could be a little bit of a hurdle if they're, especially if they're applying for multiple schools. So we are one of another number of schools who are, again, gravitating to, at least in partnership with GMAC, this concept of having a common letter of recommendation. And you know, I can't talk about all the nuts and bolts of it right now, but ultimately I can see from the industry standpoint, more adoption of this sort of similar letters of recommendation experience so that, you know, there won't be too much pushback from the people who write the letters of recommendation, if there's one that exists today. But I think at the end of the day, all the schools, we all want sort of the same thing from that part of the application, is just an objective viewpoint of somebody's experiences from a professional standpoint.
Right, right. So UCLA Anderson will be joining this Common Rec. I think the experiment actually started last year, but it's expanding this year.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I myself, I participated, I remember there was about 25 different programs in the room at the initial sort of kickoff to the discussion when I think it was about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And like you said, last year, it kind of got to a point where, like, okay, a few brave schools raised their hand, and then we joined that group as well.
Right. Okay. What advice would you give to someone thinking ahead to a fall 2018 application? So that's not the people planning to apply this cycle. It's somebody planning to apply next application cycle. Because on some level, frankly, they should start. You know, to start now, you're already behind the eight ball, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's I love this question because fall 2018, while it sounds so far out there, it's not really too far. I was speaking with a couple of individuals this morning who are looking at applying to UCLA Anderson. And my advice, you know, if especially say, you know, like break down different parts of the application, is that from a standardized test score, I think it takes people about a year to get the score that they really want. There's very few who can just roll out of the bed and, you know, get an 800 on the GMAT. So there's some preparation that goes into that. You know, it's July. Wouldn't it be great to be in July 2018 and already have the GMAT done? And then next thing you know, all you have to do, like looking at round one applications, which, you know, typically August to October deadlines, having that out of the way. But, you know, in addition to that, with over a year before that fall 2018 submission cycle, if possible, visit the campus. You know, like I said, we are an open campus starting in October. You can start seeing opportunities to visit the classroom and meet with students and faculty, all those things I mentioned before. Start talking to people who are either in business school or have an MBA degree. You know, again, our research shows that people find out about the MBA by someone they know, whether it be in the workplace, family, a member or a friend. I myself, you know, you were alluding to a little bit earlier, how did I make this transition from engineering into, like, you know, management education? I met somebody who had an MBA, and, you know, they were talking about, when I was talking about from a cross-functional team standpoint, we were saying, like, what's your next assignment? One person was going to South Dakota, another person was getting ready to go to Iowa, and then there was a couple of women who were, one was going to New York and one was going to Miami. We were like, what do you do? You know, and they were like, oh, I do marketing. I have my MBA. And that was sort of the introduction for me to investigate that.
So, wow. That's funny. Yeah. In a small, seemingly incidental meeting.
Yes, you know, and the next thing you know, it's like they start talking, especially I think for our community, is passionate about their experience and time at Anderson. You know, they won't do the heavy sale push on you, but they'll say, like, you know, hey, you may want to check out a good school, a great school like Anderson, go on campus. And those interactions, that small advice, next thing you know, they can go, you know, into the deep end of learning more about the program and then what it takes to apply competitively and all that. So, you know, back to your original question, visiting the campus, talking to people, start looking at the different elements of the application itself. Like, you don't need to go approach people to write your letters of recommendation, let alone, you know, start writing the essay.
Of course.
Take a look at the essay, especially at multiple schools, because some schools do video essays, right? Some schools have a different interviewing format. So just being aware of those type of things can, like, really open your eyes to the opportunities the great opportunities ahead.
Sometimes we talk to prospective clients, prospective applicants who are planning ahead. Actually, it seems like there are more and more, which I'm pleased to see. And one of the things I'll say, you know, what do you want to do after your MBA? And they say, well, I'm not sure. I might want to go into consulting or marketing or finance. Now, that tells me that they really don't know what they want to do.
Yeah.
Do you feel it's important for them, for applicants, to perhaps use at least if they're not sure of their career direction, and we both know that they don't have to know exactly what they want to do for the next 30 years, but that they have some direction when they apply to an MBA, and that they should maybe use this time, this next year, to clarify their goals, have informational interviews, et cetera?
Definitely. I think those are the strongest applications that I see where they have an awareness of what they actually want to do. So just say I want to do management consulting, like what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like you like alluded to earlier. So going in, because even I have to say that while all of a sudden I sort of, when I was thinking about getting an MBA, I did latch on to like, yeah, I want to do management consulting. And somebody did push me like, what does that mean? Do you know who the firms are? And at that time, I was aware of the McKinsey's, the Bain's, and Deloitte, et cetera. But that was because I was working at a firm that used them, or the firm was a client of theirs. But I didn't really know all of the different, say, opportunities, divisions, clients that those firms had. So having awareness of what that career from a skill set demands would be helpful. So I think just starting to go, you know, one or two layers below just the concept is important. And you know it best to kind of say individuals who that, you know, that you work with, I work with, or come across, it's like just kind of pushing them to go a little bit, a couple layers below just the thought, because then, you know, trying to find the right fit from a school standpoint is important to see if that school, that opportunity can get, you know, you applicant to your ultimate goal.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of interesting though when you do the idea of going deeper, you know, both into your motivations, and analyzing your experiences, that frequently makes all the difference between a very blah, superficial essay or interview plan, for that matter, and something that's really meaningful.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Right. What would you have liked me to ask you?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think, you know, not to wordsmith my own, but something in the area like, what do you wish people would know about the UCLA Anderson opportunity that you think not enough people know about?
Okay. Okay. Here it comes. What do you think? What would you like people to know about that people just don't get about UCLA Anderson's program? How's that?
That's perfect. That is perfect. And I have an answer for it. So
go for it.
You know, at the end of the day, I think it's that they don't realize that we're not just an entertainment school.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
They fall quickly into like, oh, you're Los Angeles. I'm sure there's great opportunities.
La La Land.
But then I started talking to them, you know, like I'm getting ready to go to China next week,
yeah.
And then India after that. And, you know, and of course I'll do domestic recruiting as well. And then I started talking about like, okay, when you look at sort of from an industry interest standpoint, our students, you know, and it's no surprise, they're going into careers in tech, you know, so we have strong partners there, Google, Amazon, you know, but those opportunities aren't in Los Angeles for the most part, not a vast majority. You know,
you have Silicon Beach in LA.
We have Silicon. And so then I start talking about, hey, you know, there's those opportunities at Silicon Beach. And then, you know, people, especially when I visit New York, some are like, you know, I want to talk to somebody, or I want to learn how many alumni or students come back to New York. I'm like, you know, we have a strong program, people going into finance on Wall Street. I really impress upon prospects or people interested in UCLA. It's more about what you want to do. All right. Not going to say that we make all dreams come true, but when you look at the firms who are recruiting on campus, you look at the opportunities that our students are creating for themselves. They're leveraging an alumni network that is worldwide. They have a strong brand behind them, UCLA. And next thing you know, they start saying like, wow, okay. And it's sort of funny too, from the internal standpoint, the current students, they definitely arm me with good information, saying like, hey, if you know of anybody who's interested in energy, please let them know. Tell them that we have a very vibrant student club. Anybody who's interested in healthcare management, I get those same sort of requests, so to speak, or demands of our students. Like, get the word out. Retail management as well. So it's like there's a lot of great opportunities, and you have to push people beyond just like, oh, entertainment, media, Los Angeles, glitzy Hollywood,
or even entrepreneurship.
And next thing you know, like, oh, and that's one thing, a slide we always provide as information. Hey, did you know that Los Angeles is number one in the world from a region standpoint for small businesses, entrepreneurism? And living here in Los Angeles, everybody can see it day to day. There's all kinds of small as well as large enterprises, but it's that spirit, like we initially started off in our conversation talking about, even with speaking about Kelsey, it's like, yeah, I have an idea, an inkling, and next thing you know, that spark gets ignited. And while some may not necessarily act upon it in the immediate time frame, but it may come, 5, 10, 15 years down the road. But being in an environment surrounded by people who are not just going to be part of the status quo, it's exciting.
Right. Yes. Thank you so much for that, the question and the answer. I appreciate them both. Alex, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Anderson's full-time program?
Well, Linda, I fully appreciate the opportunity to share this information about Anderson and my own experiences. And again, I would highly encourage people to visit our website. We've listed all the events, as other things I mentioned before, testimonials, FAQs about how to apply to the competitive program. And we have no secrets. We have no secrets, but we totally enjoy meeting people on campus and on the road. But I always tell people, if you can get on campus, I'm telling you, it's going to open your eyes in so many ways to the opportunities that that our students experience on a sort of a daily basis during the school year. And they can be that possibility may happen for them too.
Thanks, Alex. We'll include links in the show notes at exhibit.com/215 to the UCLA MBA website that Alex just provided, as well as to related articles. And we actually have several podcast interviews and blog interviews with Anderson MBA students and grads and other people that I think are relevant. Check them out. They're all linked to at exhibit.com/215. Listener, thank you too for joining Alex Lawrence and me for our 215th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please subscribe. Make sure you don't miss any future shows, be they with admissions directors, professors, current students, test prep pros, or alumni doing great things. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.